Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you hear this sound, that means this episode is also featured on our YouTube channel as a video. Head over to www.youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast to check it out.
Warning! This episode contains foul language. Always check the description of the episode for a more detailed list of episode-specific trigger warnings.
Weirdos, welcome back to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange and unusual, creepy and cringy, graphic and gruesome, yet always a little silly. A few times a month we get together and chat about something weird, and this week is no exception. Today we'll be venturing into history. Ancient history and not so ancient history as we examine a few discoveries that were confusing and horrifying, but over time we've learned a lot about each of them, and with time comes knowledge, and with knowledge comes understanding, and with understanding we overcome our fears. Yes. Most of the time. So join us as we discuss mummies, mysteries, and mermaids. My name is Ashley, and this is my beautiful best friend and co-host, Lauren.
Hello, weirdos. What an intro.
It's our faces.
You can actually see us this time.
How funny would it be, though, if we did that, and then, like, we get done recording, and it's like, oh, by the way, you only have audio.
It was only audio once again, and only will be for the rest of your life. But, well, you know what? That's fine. I actually wore the same shirt that I wore last time we recorded because I was like, maybe it'll be seen this time. It's not even anything crazy, just a little sheer moment.
Little sheer moment.
You know, we're here for it. We're here for it. We like it. Hi.
Are you ready for the eclipse on Monday?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Oh, I have a coffee ground in my tooth.
Very cool.
I don't have special glasses, but I am told that I can borrow some from a friend, so I'm hoping that is true so that I don't go blind. How about
you?
For
sure. Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm realizing now is that, like, when the listeners will hear this, it will be 2 weeks after.
That's so like, shut up.
Whatever has happened with the eclipse, whatever, like, crazy, like, A, maybe the world's the same, or B, maybe we've drifted onto a better timeline. Like, I don't know what life is going to be like when this episode airs. But right now, it's 2 days before the eclipse. I'm going to be in about 97% totality where I am. So that's going to be really cool.
It is so cool.
I'll be working, but me and my office mates, I now have multiple office mates. It's no longer just like me sat alone in an office. We ordered some special glasses that are going to get here before.
So you'll be able to pop out and experience the eclipse.
Yeah. Yeah, we've already said, like, no meetings between noon and two.
Like, we are going for it. Yeah, I saw that Illinois is going to have a great view of it, so that is very exciting.
Well, Carbondale, where I went to college, is in the path of totality. So Southern Illinois right now is going through it. Like, the National Guard is there. There are, like, millions of people showing up to watch the eclipse. It's kind of chaos. I thought about going down, and then I was like, you know what,
I'm going to avoid that. I'm going to avoid some chaotic crowds and being trampled.
Everyone's like, oh, you don't want to experience the eclipse. It's like, I'm going to experience the eclipse. I'm in 97%. It's not like
I'm going
to
have a good time.
It's not going to happen where I am.
Yes.
It's like, going to happen.
We're all going to be okay. Also happening this week, like besides the eclipse, also Mercury is in retrograde and I am like feeling it like this week, like the combo of the eclipse and Mercury has just been, it's been something special. And we've been on week two of Wilder spring break, and nobody should have a 2 week spring break trapped with their child. Listen, it's awful. And
you know what?
I love my son,
California,
but it's too much.
Really going downhill.
Truly, we're just a shithole of 2 week spring breaks. And yeah, we're going to sink into the sea and it's all going to be fine.
Do you still have a coffee ground in your teeth?
Yeah. Did you see him picking it? I think I got it.
I just saw you messing with your teeth. I can't actually see the ground. What is your coffee mug today? Because it's mornings now.
I know. I love our mornings. Not fun. I feel like last time it was at least cute. And again, nobody got to see it. KPCC, local radio station, basically like NPR. Represent.
Wow. My mug today was a gift from former guest Billy Roach. My favorite mug. It's like the most beautiful thing I've ever fucking seen in my entire life.
It's so gorgeous.
And I love it.
Okay. I cannot. I know. Billy. You're a real one. We love you.
Billy, we were talking about you before we recorded, and you're just... We're talking about, like, what it must be nice to be, like, a really... What it must be nice. What it must be like to be, like, a nice person. And, like, a thoughtful, caring, like, individual. Because, like, I consider both of us to be very nice people. We're very sweet. We're very nice. We're nice and kind to everyone we meet.
But... End of that. Yeah, like we can be polite, we can be nice, like we're not going to be aggressive, like off-putting people, but we're not like nice, like Billy, just a good, wonderful human being.
Yeah.
Really thinks of others, puts people before himself at all times. I'm like, oh, I'm not.
Oh man, I wish I put good. I wish I put another person before me.
I'm selfish as hell. Anyway,
that's life, baby.
Sorry about it.
So, hey guys, I hope you're doing okay this year with our every other week episode drop. I know it seems like episodes aren't fucking ever coming out. Sorry about it, but it's working out really nice for us. I'll tell you that
it's
much.
It's been really great with the scheduling. We love it.
It's working out really good for these two. Today we've got some weird stories for you. Lauren's going to start us off. What do you have for us first today?
I haven't done this segment before. It was one of our sponsored segments, and Ashley does a much better job with it, but I'm going to give it the old college try. Strolling through the luxurious Japanese hillsides and swimming blissfully through the sparkling ocean waters. Let's explore through the riches and mysteries from years past as we dive deep into ancient artifacts with Addie Rive.
You did great. You did really well.
I didn't mean to go so nasally, but then, like, I couldn't escape it. But...
It's like Pringles. Once you pop, the fun don't stop. Once
you can't
pop
stop.
That, you can't correct without, like, completely being like, let me start that over. And not about that here. We're just about
That's where
in.
We were. Ancient Artifacts with Addie Rife. Thank you loyal listener who we adore, Addie Rife, for giving us this idea for a segment. You too can sponsor a segment. You know the drill. We got Cursed Crooners. We got our music one from our dear friend Mel. That was amazing too. We got good stuff, but we're looking for you.
Yeah.
But
only you can prevent forest fires. And
only
submit.
Only you can prevent forest fires.
Segments to our show. Which also, like, here's the thing. Only you can prevent forest fires is gaslighting.
I know. I want the 1,000% is. Excuse. There are other people who can prevent them and are better at preventing them than me.
That can prevent forest fires. I don't even know how to start a fire.
I actually don't think that I can. Yeah. So I can't start one. I can't prevent one. You're never going to find me in the forest, really.
I'm not even there.
Because I don't enjoy nature. Like, I'm not even there. So don't try to tell me what's up. Anyway, Addie, love you, ancient artifacts. Here we go. In 2022 and 2023, there's been several, which is kind of upsetting. We have been finding some super creepy mermaid, quote unquote, mummies in Japan. And it's weirder than scientists have ever expected. That's the interesting thing, is like, it's already weird, but now that they're getting studied and we're bringing them into labs, they're like, oh, wait, this was even more bizarre than the sentence you just heard about the mermaid mummy.
See, here's the thing. I know I mentioned mummies and mermaids in my opening, so you would think that, like, I know I'm privy to what Lauren's going to talk about today. Negative. I saw the link. So I need to know what the fuck you're talking about when you say mermaid mummies.
I know. And to be honest, like, it sounds creepier than it is, but I'm just like, I didn't know this existed. So a centuries old mummified mermaid that scientists recently revealed to be nothing more than like a gruesome doll of animal parts gets even more bizarre. So in 2023, after a 2022 discovery, it took them like a full year to really get in the lab and find out what they were looking at. Researchers discovered that this mermaid, which was about 10 inches long, lying inside a sealed wooden box within a Japanese temple located in Okayama, they found out that it was the torso and head of a monkey sewed onto a decapitated fish's body.
Classics.
Sewn on, and it does, like, I actually sent photos to our Keep It Weird email so that you could, like, follow along if you wanted. So you can go check it out. And listeners, you can also look it up. Just mermaid mummy. It'll pop right up for you. But 12 inches long in a sealed wooden box. It is a monkey head on a decapitated fish's body.
And oh,
it does
Lord
look like a
heaven.
Monkey mermaid. Yeah, it looks like, and it's small, like 12 inches long. It's just like
a
little
foot
guy. It's just like a like trophy monkey fish that is horrifying looking. And they're like, so why?
Yeah, why?
And then upon further research, again, they had to go through a lot, look into, you know, Japanese history, traditions, all of that to be like, what's going on here? And like, why was this sewn on? Like, okay, this doesn't exist in nature, which was our first fear, but what's going on here? So this hybrid represents a ningyo from Japanese mythology, which is a fish-like creature with a human head that is fabled to help cure disease and increase longevity of life. So it's like fountain of youth.
Yeah.
Help me live forever. It like centuries ago was like all everybody fully believed that this was real and this was the secret to a longer life.
Honestly, like love that for them. Love that for us to know that like we've always just been so fucking weird.
Like, weirdos, forever and ever.
Weirdos have been around since the beginning of time. Love that.
So this ningyo or spinoff of the ningyo was, it had been displayed in a glass case at this Japanese temple for people to come worship. That is how much they were like holding on to this idea. And then eventually it was stored away for more than 40 years. And there was a letter inside the mummy's box that claim that this specimen was real and caught by a fisherman sometime between 1730 and 1741. But as they started to break it down and study it a little more, it was likely created as a hoax to sell to affluent people wanting to improve their health or longer lives. And somebody was like, let's really just stick it to these richies and sew a monkey head onto a fish's body to make some money, which, like, man.
They take it and they're like, well, it's weird that it does have Frankenstein stitching all over its body.
1,000%. But whatever. Researchers from the Kurashiki University of Science and Arts, or KUSA, in Japan, took possession of the mermaid in early February 2022 with permission from the temple's priests. So I was like, because that was honestly my first thought was like, so did you just like steal it? Was this like national treasure where it was like, we must get the Declaration of Independence? But they cleared it with the priests. They went like through all the right avenues, which I appreciate. And they were like, we got to study this eerie artifact using all these different techniques. But huge was the X-ray and the CT scan and radiocarbon dating, DNA analysis, all of it. So this tiny little monkey-headed fish-tailed mermaid creature went in every machine available And sorry, the coffee ground keeps popping out. Okay. And on February 7th.
I just like to think of like this one coffee ground just finding its way through like the grooves of your teeth.
As I've been talking, I like feel it. It's like it went to my tongue and then to inside of my lip and then back up. And I was like, you know, there's just going to be a coffee ground in this
episode.
It's
a real Osmosis Jones situation happening inside
you. Osmosis Jones. I haven't thought about that in so long. Oh, okay. On February 7th, the team finally released its findings in an official CUSA statement translated from Japanese, saying what they found out about this mermaid. And it was even more bizarre than it already sounded because the mermaid's torso actually did not belong to a monkey as they thought, but it was made predominantly from cloth, paper, and cotton held together by metal pins. Ooh. From the neck to the lower back. So it was even more fake than imagined, but they did a good job with it and it stayed intact all these years. It had been painted with a paste made from a mix of sand and charcoal. So they're like, total hoax. But even weirder, and this is why I'm like, man, these people just went to the greatest lengths to trick these people and make a dollar. The torso was covered in components stripped from other animals. There was mammal hair that they couldn't quite get like an official DNA answer from, but it was like mammal hair. Fish skin, likely from a pufferfish, were on the arms, shoulders, necks, and cheeks. The jaw and teeth were taken from a predatory fish, and its claws were made from keratin, meaning they likely came from a real animal of some sort. And the lower half of the mermaid came from a fish. They think a croaker, which is a ray-finned fish that makes a croaking sound with its bladder. Mm. Casual. No, thank you. And it's known for its buoyancy, which I guess is like what kept it afloat when people discovered this creature
all
that had just been chucked into the ocean.
Fish are known for their buoyancy.
I know. So I was like, get out of here. But apparently this fish specifically, I don't know. But I was like, man, they took
really
the time.
Good in water.
They like know how to swim, which is crazy.
It's crazy.
For fish. The researchers were not able to identify any complete DNA. It was all theoretical. And, you know, again, they were just doing the research they could. And it was like, it kind of looks like this fish, blah, blah, blah. But the radiocarbon dating of the scales indicated that they could go back as far as the early 1800s. So slightly later than what was originally quoted in this Japanese temple, but not as ancient of an artifact as we wanted to believe.
We thought it was more ancient.
Mm-hmm. But this new analysis suggests that the mermaid was created to trick people into believing the Ningyo, as I was saying, and like the healing abilities were real. But it shows that like counterfeit creatures, like people will spare no expense or any amount of time. And then
nothing's
the
changed.
The most upsetting part. Yeah, I'm like, nothing has changed, first of all. But even weirder, the part that I did not like was there are 14 other of these mermaids that have been discovered in Japan, and they all just get like uglier and creepier and terrible. And again, there are pictures online. A lot of them are these like horrified, hollowed out monkey faces, but attached to
fucking fish.
All kinds of different things. It's not always just like a fish tail and a monkey torso or what is believed to look like that. Like there's like weird, like bird talons, like attached to some of them. It's all terrible, and I could not look at the photos for very long, but as recently as late last year, October of 2023, another one was found to add to the collection, and it was brought back to the U.S. from Japan more than 100 years ago, but has been just, like, chilling in Ohio in a museum, and it is a mix of fish, monkey, and lizard parts, and it truly is, like, Frankenstein's monster in a creepy little 11.5-inch creature, and this one is being called the Fiji Mermaid because
it looks
closer to the one that P.T. Barnum brought over in the 1840s, and so a lot of people were like, oh, okay, so wait a minute, did P.T. Barnum trick us too? And it's like,
P.T. Barnum would never.
That's what we've all been trying to say. Like, none of his stuff was real. He was a trickster.
No,
but it's just funny that it's like shock and awe. Like, wait, was the Fiji mermaid fake? Because this is a hoax.
Magic isn't real?
So I know. So, P.T. Barnum, we are revealing for the very first time here on Keep It Weird that you may have lied.
You might have tricked us.
You heard it here first.
And we never saw it coming.
We didn't see it. But we found Fiji Mermaid's twin at the end of last year. And this one, again, is like creepy as hell. It was in the Clark County Historical Society in Springfield, Ohio for a very long time. And documents were supplied to the society saying, like, this is from the early 1800s. This is the Fiji Mermaid, you know, like all official. And of course, as we are continuing to scan these things, they are just little Frankenstein monster animals. And they're creepy as hell, but they're floating around, and I don't think it's the last of them. No. Japan, you got a lot of weird little mummy trophies swimming in your oceans.
No, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of these weird mummy mermaids. But speaking of,
I want to see more
ancient Japan. Have you been watching Shogun?
No, I need to start it. I am yelled at by all my friends.
Good. It is not something that I thought that I would ever be interested in, but I've really been expanding my horizons this year because Joey also had me watch Masters of the Air, which I lovingly refer to as Flyboys.
It is Flyboys. I watched that as well.
That was incredible.
I cried my eyes out.
I did
cry. Like a little bebe.
I did cry quite a bit. But yeah, Shogun, which is on Hulu right now. It's an FX show.
Right.
It's really, really, really incredible. And I really appreciate their use of, you know, Japanese throughout.
Yeah, they're like using the traditions and like they're showing it.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing historical.
I just feel like, you know, if that show had been made 10 years ago, all of these Japanese people would be speaking English. And they would just be like,
1,000%.
Just play along. And pretend it's Japanese. And it's like, no, you can just speak Japanese. It's actually
no, you should
so
speak
much
Japanese and we will use our eyeballs read subtitles because this feels actually more legitimate. No, it's so funny because I saw a million commercials for it and it was one of those things, same as you, where I was like, I don't think this will be the show for me and that's fine. But now you are like the eighth person to be like, it's please great. Watch it. And now I can't wait to. But I'm also like going to Japan is like
a dream.
Number one on my list for travel, and I hope it happens soon. There's just
it's like the most beautiful
so many cool things about
place
it.
I've ever seen. I mean, I've never been.
Truly.
I've just seen pictures and videos.
We're pretending. But yeah, as creeped out as I am by these mermaid mummies, like I hope we find more, and I kind of want to go to Japan even more now to like, I don't know, take a little swim and see if I can find a little monkey head, you know? So we'll see.
What?
Just saying.
Do you think they're in the ocean?
I don't know. What they might be floating if somebody just chucks it in there to be like, I happened upon it.
Oh, okay.
They're buoyant, you know, because fish, I don't know if you realized,
they
have some
can
buoyancy.
Float, okay.
So like it might float by a boat. It's wild. These things are very creepy.
They are very creepy. I've always creepy.
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 Wee-wee. Creepy.
No, I always really enjoyed Halloween Town in Burbank, California. Always had Fiji mermaid there in a glass case. And
love that.
Obviously a replicant of the Fiji mermaid, but still. It was always one of my favorite things to gander upon. In that spooky,
I know.
Spooky
I mean,
place.
It. Yeah, I miss that place so much. But like, yeah, the recreations have been so wild. But also, it's like they were just using, you know, some arts and crafts supplies to remake those. But then seeing like, I just can't get over imagining people like, okay, monkey head check, fish base
check,
lizard tail triple check, and just like. Gluing
Lauren.
Or whatever they could use. Glue wasn't around. Putting the scales on.
Anything to make a buck.
But I'm tired and I just don't see myself putting any kind of effort similar to that into anything in life. Like I'm not a Pinterest mom. I think this of moms at Wilder's preschool too, when they're like, I made a sensory bin for my kid and then we baked cookies and flew off into the sunset. And I'm like, I gave Wilder his tablet and a handful of M&Ms and was like, I'm going to be over here.
I'm going to be watching Summer House just in my room.
I'm going to be watching Summer House with my headphones on over here. Like, let me
know. Yeah, but I think that about, like, influencers. Like, anytime I see, like, their, like, how their kitchen is organized. Like, if you saw, like, my cabinet with my pots and pans, not a rack in sight. It is piled on, they are piled on top of each other. If I take out a pot or a pan, the noise that comes out of my kitchen.
Yeah.
It's just a life that I'm on. I'm so, it's so foreign to me to be like super organized, clean, tidy. It's not that I'm dirty. It's just that I have stuff and I don't have place for it. And we were talking about this on the Losers Club because they were like, Ashley, how do you keep your library? And I was like, well, stack of books over here.
Let me show you my pile of books.
Stack of books over here. There's a stack of books over here. If I reach down. There's a book. If I reach down, there's a book. Like, how do I organize my library?
Yeah.
Strewn about my home.
Yeah, 1000%. We did a Zoom with some of our listeners. It was one of the, like, it was the prize for the Halloween season. Like, so we did fun. That Zoom party. Yeah. And I remember we were talking about books on there. And I just, like, went to a corner of my room and grabbed a pile of books from under my nightstand. And then I went to my dresser and grabbed some more. And I was just watching you all on the Zoom call, like, what? And, like, same thing. I was like, yeah, this is my library. There's a little over here, little over there. We do have a bookshelf in the living room, but it's, like, some are stacked nicely. And then there's books just sitting on top of those books. Also. And then Wilder's bookshelf in his room is the same. Like, kids' books, they are not.
What are you going to organize them?
They are also a disaster. I know. Listen. But this is why we are friends. Yeah. And I just, like, we can get off this topic. But I'm like,
it's the chaos.
I so felt seen by the pots and pans thing because I've never seen any of my, even my, like, close friends' houses look the same as my pots and pans. They all have the organizers. And I was like, am I the only chaotic person? No. So thank you for also having
a mountain of
pots and pans.
And I know all it takes is buying a rack. Like, it's not a lot of work. You just buy a rack and then you put the pots and pans on the rack and now you have a rack of pots and pans.
I know. Of the things that we're too lazy to do, that one's probably the easiest.
That's like the easiest bit.
But I'm not going to attach scales to a monkey fish lizard. Okay? That's all I was trying to say.
I am more likely to attach scales to a monkey fish than I am to organize my pots and pans, TBH.
That is hilarious. And that, I actually could see that for you because you're crafty. So I could see you being like, well, it's an art project. It is an art project. So I'm going to attach the scales and do some sewing. Speaking
of art projects, I can't find my tooth anywhere. My crazy wolf tooth? Remember my crazy tooth?
Oh! I was not. Okay, yes. Wait, that's sad.
I know I have it. I didn't throw it away. It's somewhere in this house. I just have to find it because I decided finally what I was going to. I bought this tiny little shelf. It didn't look like it was tiny. It looked like it was a normal size shelf. And that came, it was like a miniature shelf. And I was like, guys, come on. Like, I get it. Like, I should have read the dimensions. Like, for sure. Like, it's on me.
Like, I get it. It's on me, but
at the same time,
who is this for?
Please. So it's this tiny shelf.
Girl, please.
And I was like, what could I possibly do with this tiny shelf? And then I thought of my gnarly wolf tooth. And I was like, oh, a place to display my gnarly wolf tooth. And I bought some rose gold paint. So I was going to paint the tooth like rose gold and put it in a little glass jar and put it on this tiny shelf. And I can't fucking find it. So that's life. Anyways.
It's very sad. You're going to find
I'll fight.
It's okay. Wolf tooth is
it coming. Didn't grow feet and walk away. Or did it?
Well, or did it lizard feet? Okay.
I have a new segment today. What a joy.
We love it.
This segment is called America the Beautiful, and I wrote a song for it.
I'm so excited.
I'm going to need you to be patriotic, though, while I sing. America, America, you've got some messed up history. It's sometimes good, but often not good. Which is it today? Let's see.
That was so good.
Thank you so much. This is...
We're all songwriters. On this
America the Beautiful is our segment where we share stories about American history. We haven't been a country for very long, but boy, have we given you some bang for your buck. So this is kind of an extreme bummer of a story. Womp womp. Super sorry, but it is very interesting and it has helped shape the world we live in today. So get over it.
Everybody just relax.
Trigger warnings, mental health, death, maybe a little incest. We don't know. So today I'm going to teach you about the Collier Brothers of Manhattan and their mansion full of garbage. So
sure.
On March 21st, on March...
Queepy.
What? Queepy.
You're having some speech days. Okay. It's fine. Everything's fine.
On March 21st, 1947, an anonymous tipster who called himself Charles Smith... That's irrelevant. I don't even know why it's in my notes. An anonymous tipster called the New York City Police Department to report a dead body locked in a four-story brownstone at 2078 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And the police weren't that concerned because they knew who lived at that house, and it was fairly routine for neighbors to call and complain about the place, from bad smells to strange sounds in the middle of the night, and even just like prank calls from teenagers who had developed like urban legends about the inhabitants of this house. So they sent a patrolman out to check out the sitch, and he didn't get an answer when he knocked on the doors and windows several times. So he tried to enter himself and found that he literally could not enter. There was something blocking the door. So now he's worried and he calls for backup. So more guys show up along with the New York City Fire Department to try and get into this house in case someone inside is hurt or worse, actually dead. So the firefighters ended up having to break through like iron bars covering the windows and then break apart boards that were sealing the windows from the inside. And they couldn't get in after that either, even after they broke through all of that, because they realized the place was stacked floor to ceiling with stuff, junk, garbage, things. So slowly, piece by piece, the responders remove old books, cardboard boxes, newspapers, car parts, musical instruments, furniture, scrap metal, knickknacks, everything. And pretty soon, there's a giant pile of trash on Fifth Avenue, and they have to call for more backup to just, like, control the crowd that's forming around. That's like, yeah, what's I'm happening? Sure.
Everyone's like, excuse me.
What is going on? It took 5 hours of struggling just to get into the building, and they had to enter through a second story window to do so. And one patrolman was able to fit through, and among the stacks and stacks of garbage, he eventually found the decomposing body of a man named Homer Collier, dressed in a tattered old bathrobe.
Oof.
Again, the police knew these guys, so they knew Homer had a brother named Langley, and they assumed that it was Langley that had made the call about the dead body, and that he was now hiding in the place or somewhere else. But after an entire day and night of searching, they couldn't find him in the house, so they figured he wasn't there. On April 8th, 2.5 weeks later, after removing 140 tons of accumulated
tons
of
trash. That's so much. Oh my God.
Sanitation workers discovered the decomposed body of Langley Collier as well, hidden in a small tunnel of garbage in the home.
2 weeks later, his body was discovered?
2 weeks later, they discovered his body. He was only 10 feet away from where the body of his brother had been discovered. But there were 140 tons.
I cannot get over it. Like, when you said the word tons, I don't know. Like, obviously, you weren't going to just say 140 pounds. I'm like, that's like what I weigh. But I'm like, when you said tons, I was just like, that really put it in perspective of holy shit.
Floor to ceiling, every room. So Langley was found only 10 feet away from where they found his brother. And by the time they found him, most of his body had been eaten by rats. So sorry about
I'm
that.
I'm so upset. It's like when they find the dead cats on Hoarders.
That's exactly what it's like.
Humans.
Except it's humans. So Homer, the first brother found, had only been dead, they imagine 10 to 12 hours from when they found him. So he was the first guy found on the first day. He had been dead for like 10 to 12 hours. He died of starvation.
Ooh.
The medical examiner determined Langley had probably died somewhere around March 9th, approximately 2 weeks earlier than that, 2 weeks earlier than the first day the police showed up to investigate. And his cause of death was asphyxiation, and they assumed that he had been crushed while crawling through one of the tunnels of garbage.
Jeez.
So the Collier brothers are known as America's first hoarders.
I was going to say, this is just the worst episode of Hoarders I have ever heard.
I'm sure that they were not the first people in this country with a hoarding disorder, but they're the most infamous, and they introduced the affliction to the wider world around them. So people had not even heard of this before. They couldn't fathom why someone would do this to their home and do this to themselves.
Keep all that stuff. Because you're saying one of the brothers may have died from starvation. That just makes me think, like, did he just get stuck between his stuff and couldn't find a way out to get to food? Like, I just wonder.
It's even more sad than that, actually.
I'm sorry. I will just let you continue, sadly.
Well, who were these guys? How could they afford a four-story brownstone in New York City? Why would they live in all this garbage? What's going on? So here's who they were. This is very interesting stuff. Homer was born in 1881, and Langley was born 4 years later in 1885. The brownstone was purchased by their father, Dr. Herman Livingston Collier, in 1909. He was a gynecologist who worked at the famous Bellevue Hospital. And he was also extremely eccentric. Like, he was known in the neighborhood and around the city for being, like, kind of weird. Like, for example, he would take a canoe to work. He would take a canoe to the East River. Canoe down the East River, and then carry the canoe all over Manhattan as he, like, went to his office.
Wow, what? Okay.
So, I mean, he was just kind of a weird guy.
You're making life fun. Yeah, keep it quirky.
He ended up marrying his first cousin, Susie Gage Frost Collier, in 1880.
Well, nobody stood a chance in this.
Listen, right. Now we know. Maybe we didn't know as much then about marrying our first cousins, but now we know. So he married his first cousin. She was a direct descendant of Robert Livingston, who was one of the original five draftees of the Declaration of Independence.
Whoa.
Yeah. And in fact, Homer and Langley claimed they could actually trace their lineage all the way back to the Pilgrim settlement at Plymouth. So old money.
Yeah.
First Americans.
Old money to the, like, the oldest of money.
And their parents, more than likely, weren't the only instance of incest. There were a lot of rumors, and a lot of people had suspicions about the boys' relationship with their mother. It was just, like, a really weird situation. Like, after their father left, they stayed with their mom. But this was like, they were like grown men. They were like 20 in their 20s, and they stayed with their mom, never married, never dated, would like be seen taking their mom out, like almost like they were dating. Like, that's like the only person they were ever seen with.
I don't like it.
And then, so she died in 1929. And that's when things really started to kind of go downhill mental health-wise and physical health-wise. So she died in 1929, and right after that was the stock market crash that kicked off the Great Depression. So in these boys' minds, like, the two were connected, and they just felt like kind of the world was ending. Like, they were omens of impending doom. And they just started getting more and more, like, They wouldn't go out in the world. Their neighborhood was changing a little bit. It was becoming a little bit more of an urban neighborhood. And they had had a couple break-ins, so they just started getting more and more, like, nervous paranoid. And scared and paranoid of break-ins, and which is why they, like, boarded up their windows. And
right.
They just kind of stopped leaving. And the thing is, so before this, before their mom died and everything, they were intelligent, social people. They both went to Columbia University. Homer had a law degree. Yeah. Langley studied engineering and chemistry. And Langley was also an accomplished concert pianist who performed at Carnegie Hall. So, like, they were, like,
oh my God,
kind of, like, successful.
They were doing
people.
So well, which that makes me even more sad. Not that, like, I can't be sad about any person, but just that, like, what a bright future they had ahead of themselves. But again, it feels like they weren't, like, fully given a chance.
Yeah, I don't think
some
they were
of
working
their home
with,
life things.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
a full deck of cards. Mm-mm. For 4 years after her death, the brothers were still seen out occasionally for social events and work. But in 1933, Homer had some hemorrhaging behind his eyes and he ended up going blind. So Langley quit his job to care for him. And from then on, like, for the rest of their lives, they just lived off the inheritance their father left them. And it was at this time when they stopped leaving the brownstone that they started to, like, lose touch with reality. Langley once told a reporter that he dressed and fed his brother. He would play piano sonatas to entertain him. And he insisted that his brother was going to recover from his blindness because all he fed him was oranges, bread, oatmeal, and tea. And, like, that was going to, like, cure his blindness.
That is the eyeball cure right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
So at one point he told people the reason he was collecting so many newspapers, because that was kind of the first thing, was that there were stacks and stacks of newspapers all over. And he said that he was collecting them because Homer was eventually going to be able to see again. And he wanted his brother to be able to read the newspapers once he regained his eyesight.
That's just so sad.
It's so
just
sad.
It started as, like, a wild thought, obviously, but, like, a pure loving thought at the same time of, like, well, I gotta save these for when my brother can see, and I'm feeding him all these nutritional things. I'm just so sad for these brothers.
But is it nutrition? Because it's oranges, bread, and oatmeal.
No, I know. I'm saying, like, he in his
head, he was thinking,
I'm, like, giving him health. This is the cure for eyeballs, which no one has said ever.
Well, and that's the thing. Never leaving the house, eating this diet of not a lot, no protein to be seen.
Nope.
Homer's health then started to decline even more, and he developed rheumatism that paralyzed him from the waist down.
Jeez, oh man.
So at this point, the junk had piled up enough in the house that both men were living in nests that they created. So, like, nests. Homer had a nest over here, and Langley had a nest over here, and they would travel through, like, tunnels. Well, actually, Homer didn't. He just lived in his nest, and Langley would travel through the tunnels, and he couldn't move. He was paralyzed and blind. So Langley would travel through these tunnels of junk to bring food to his brother who lived in a nest. Isn't this just, like, what?
What is going on?
Like,
what? And how have I never heard of this? I, like, thank you for bringing this to me, because I, like, mind blown. What? This is so disturbing and sad and crazy.
So crazy.
The starvation makes more sense now, and you were so right that it was more depressing than I ever knew.
Yeah. So Langley would, like, leave the house at night only, and he would walk around the city. He would collect food and trash, more trash for the house. He would just collect all this stuff to bring back to build their little nests in their home, and whatever food he found, and he would bring it back to the house. So what we know of their life, you know, obviously we didn't know their day-to-day, but their telephone was disconnected in 1937. Their water and electricity were turned off in 1938. They just stopped paying the bills. So we know Langley would fetch water from a pump in a nearby park. And what we can only assume is that they would use random places in their home for bathroom purposes, like hoarders do, where it's like, this is my bathroom corner with all my excrement.
Pee on this. Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to pee and poop in this like bowl from my kitchen or on this newspaper pile.
So that's how these men
Deep breaths, everyone.
Yeah. They didn't get treatment for their mental health disorders. And I mean, at the time, we didn't even know what hoarding was, really.
I was going to say it was foreign to everybody, so no one would know even what to
do. Well, and they didn't have, like, friends, family coming over to be like, hey, do you guys think maybe it's getting out of control? Or
maybe we should, like, shift some things around in here. And actually, like, living in a nest with no power is not going to be good for you. But, yeah, they had nobody.
But basically, what seems to have happened is that Langley... So Homer, paralyzed and blind, was completely dependent on his brother to bring food into his nest every day. And one day, Langley was crushed by the trash and junk, and he asphyxiated and died. And then Homer just starved to death because he had
brought him anything.
No way to get out. To this day, firefighters and police officers in New York City still sometimes refer to any building or place of residence that is so filled with trash and debris that it's dangerous as a Collier's Mansion. So if they come over the walkie and they say we have a Collier's Mansion, that means it's a hoarder situation. And a small park was built on the corner right next to their brownstone that still exists today called Collier Brothers Park. So they have a park dedicated to them.
That's something more positive than just saying, like, you get to be the name of what police say for trash. Like, there's a park involved.
Yeah.
I just feel so bad. Like, okay, you're the trash park, man. It's fine. You're the trash boys.
You like trash.
Yeah.
I know. But, like, people do honor them as, like, you know, obviously their story is like horrible and sad, but it helped modern psychiatry. Like after the discovery of this home and the way these men were living, and unfortunately the way these men died, studies were performed for many years to better understand the nature of hoarding, obsessive compulsive disorder, and then, you know, the social isolation that comes along with that disorder. And because of them and the studies that became of the situation, more beneficial treatments were developed to help countless others who in the future would suffer from the same afflictions. So it's actually very sad, it's but very cool that
they brought awareness
to something so horrific. And you know what's funny? I actually Googled, because, you know, so many people will be like, oh, I'm a hoarder. I collect so many blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
You're not, though. I see why you said that, because we don't, like, have a better term for it, but it's like, no.
No, you're not. Like, I wanted to see, like, what's the point that you become a hoarder? Because, obviously, there's people with, like, messy houses and whatever, and, like, but what is the point where you become, where it gets to hoarder? And this is interesting. Mm-hmm. When you cross that line into hoarder is when... the amount of stuff, be it trash or, you know, not trash yet, because sometimes it's just like collecting things that you
tchotchkes.
But it's when your collection of stuff hinders you from like things that you need in your life. So if you can't cook a meal in your kitchen because of the amount of stuff in your kitchen, or if you can't get to your bed in your bedroom, so you sleep on the couch.
Right.
Hoarder. If you can't get to the toilet that you need or the shower because of stuff that's built up, that's when it becomes hoarding.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's interesting. Again, I was just about to be like, ooh, this is interesting after I just said that. So interesting. I would not call her a hoarder. And I feel like I've now been to her new apartment and it was totally clean. So maybe she was just going through something. But I had a friend who used to live in LA. She lives up north now. Her apartment in LA every time I would go over there, like all of her bedding would be on the couch, like all the blankets and pillows. And the first couple of times I was just like, oh, maybe she fell asleep on the couch or whatever. Like she lives alone. She can do whatever she wants.
I love sleeping on the couch. Go on.
Yeah, I'm like, same. So like originally I was just like, okay, cool. But then every time I went over there, it felt like more stuff was appearing in the living room. Like it was looking more like a bedroom. Like, oh, all the essentials are like out here now. And then she eventually got a dog and I started becoming the dog sitter for this dog. So then I was going over there more often. And like every time I went over there, like especially when she was out of town and I'm like sitting there with the dog and like staying overnight and stuff, it was like I was getting more of a peek inside. And I realized that her bedroom was just like cut, like her bed, it was not sleepable. Like there was just stuff stacked on it, like almost to the ceiling, the closet, like stuff was exploding out of it, which is why like clothes and other things were on the bed. Boxes were surrounding the bed. Like you couldn't even really get in her room, period. And then like her laundry area was the same. Like I don't think she could use her washer or dryer because of the stacks of things. So the only clear areas were like kitchen, bathroom. Dining room actually wasn't really accessible either because of books. It was like stacks of books. So I was like, huh. Like I started to be like, will I have to say something? But then again, now I feel like she's like has it all together and is good. So I'm like, I wonder if you can be a hoarder and then like have a breakthrough mentally and like overcome it. I always assumed you had to have like intervention, but
possibly. I do think that removing yourself from that situation, because it does, it almost does seem, you know, because I've seen episodes of Hoarders. I had a friend growing up whose parents were, now I know, like now I can look back and be like, oh, that's what was happening. They were hoarders.
Didn't know at the time.
That's why they couldn't park in their garage because there was so much stuff. And that's why they couldn't cook in their kitchen because there was so much stuff. But like at the time I was just like, it's a mess in here, right. So I think that it really, especially after reading the Call Your Brother story, the nesting thing, I think it really does have to do with like almost like a mammalian or a reptilian response of like protect myself from the world by surrounding myself so much that I can barely move. Mm-hmm. With stuff.
I'll be safe here in my safe, little spot.
My space smaller and smaller to where I'm constricted because it actually helps with my, well, you know, perceive it like you think it helps with your stress or your anxiety, but really it's like absolutely making it worse.
Well, yeah, it's so bad for you. But in your head, it's like, okay, I'm making my safe space and like nobody can get to me and the world is a terrible place. Because I do feel like that's kind of what it becomes, even if that's not what it starts as, you know, like it's some sort of mental health crisis, but then it becomes like the world is bad. The paranoia gets stronger and you're like, here is my safe space. I will surround myself with things and it's my little, it's my little nest, my little temple. But it's, it's wild. That was just like such an interesting thing with my friend that popped into my head where I don't think you could classify her as a full-on hoarder. Cause again, like she's gone on to live a normal life. And even when this situation was happening, like she was still leaving the house and doing other things, but it's just so wild that she did have so much stuff that she could only be on the couch. And I know she was going through like some things at that time. So I wonder if it was like about to turn into something and she was able to overcome it.
Yeah. I mean, we still,
it's just fascinating
to this day, don't understand. Like, we know hoarding is a trauma response to something, but we don't really fully understand why hoarding is the result. Like, we don't quite understand the psychology behind it. And there are levels of it where it's like, oh, I can't get to my bedroom, but I still go out. I still socialize. Eventually, it gets to the point, though, where the agoraphobia kicks in. And you, I think since having Wilder, you haven't really had this problem. And maybe you never did because you've always been a pretty like social person. But I find the longer I stay inside and like don't go out, the harder it is for me to like go out. Like I absolutely can see in myself, I get agoraphobia very much so.
Yeah.
Because I can see that getting to a point where it's like, now I literally can't leave my house and I don't want to see people that come to my house. I got really bad in LA where it was like, I don't want to run into a neighbor. And it's like, who cares? That. Just like, I didn't want to do laundry because I was afraid I would run into a neighbor and have to say, like, hi, how are you? Good, how are you? Bye. Mm-hmm. The thought of that was so awful that I was like, I just won't do laundry. And it's like, hey, what?
I know. I have gotten better now. Like, you're right. I am, like, even though I am, like, textbook introvert, I am very social. So, like, I am fine in social situations. And I've gotten back to that. And I feel like my social life is more normal now. But coming out of COVID, which I know was true for a lot of us, it's not just unique to me. But coming out of COVID, I very much related to that. Like, to the point where I, like, even when stores were open, masks were starting to come off, I was like, I'm only doing grocery delivery. Like, I will only do delivery because, like, I can't go to the store. And Alex was like, what is happening to you? Like, you used to love going to the store because, again, like, since having Wilder, he was like, it was your escape. It was, like, your time away from the house. And now I'm just like, no, like, I will stay here with Wilder and, like, only do delivery. So it is funny when you said, like, the more you stay home, the more that becomes the norm, because that was absolutely true. After, like, staying indoors and staying away from people for so long in COVID, I was like, I can never go back to the way things were. And, like, thank goodness that is not the case. And I've gotten back to normal, but I feel like I got a glimpse into how that can feel, where I was just like, the world is bad and I will stay indoors now forever.
Yeah. I know for a fact that there is someone listening to this right now or watching who is depressed or anxious or whatever, and they're scared to leave the house and they're in that situation. The only advice I can give you is to go out of the house. Go to the store, run some errands, mm-hmm. try not to spend an entire day at home talking to no one ever. Like, make one, like, get out of the house once a day. Yeah. Because the more you do it, the more it reinforces nothing bad is going to happen. These interactions aren't that bad. You become more social. You become more comfortable getting out of the house, but you do have to leave the house. I've been there.
Yes.
Hard. Let's spin the wheel. Let's get out of here. It's time. Ooh. That's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you, as usual, for listening. We love you very much. Thank you for watching. We're back. Ding. And we spin the wheel now, bitch. We spin the wheel.
And now you can see it.
And you can see it now. I'll put it on the screen. You're not going to have to look at my phone. We are spinning the wheel today to see how we're going to close out the show. Are we going to play Hive Mind with Xenar cards? Are we going to pull a tarot card? Are we going to ask a random question? Oops, I don't have any prepared. Are we going to play Bibliomancy? Are we going to give an inspirational quote off the top of our heads, or are we gonna say fuck it, bye, we're not doing any of that? Let's see now.
The wheel,
the clock.
Good, it's random question.
The one that we're like, we don't have prepared.
I don't have one prepared.
I used to have a freaking list too, for not even for this reason, just like to spring on you on an episode, and I don't think I have it.
Hold on. I feel like I definitely wrote some down.
Found it. I had it not saved under questions, but
random question.
What's the most unusual item on your desk right now, right in front of you?
I mean, I've got a lot of weird shit on my desk right now.
I know, but cards. Like, what is, like, so out of pocket?
So out of
pocket. Oh, I have a good one because I'm at Alex's desk.
Please show me. Yeah. You go first.
Because Alex is such a weirdo Gonzo statue. But it's Gonzo as a pirate.
Sure.
Because this is Alex Ogle. And what's funny is, like, it took me a minute to be like, oh, this would be unusual to our listeners. To me, I was like, well, I can't do Gonzo because this is just my husband.
This is just my life.
These Muppets are everywhere. Oh, Lord. Also, his heartburn medication.
It's a scan of my creepy baby hands. Do you remember this?
Yes, I don't like it. I don't.
This is my baby, because it's my little baby hands, and you can almost kind of see my little baby face peeking in because
that's worse.
When I was born, My mom took me to work with her, and she, you know, at the hospital, and she had one of those big, like, Xerox machines, and she was like, I love my baby,
like, put your baby,
and I'm
going to
put her in there. So she just shoved me in and the Xerox machine.
I get it. I would have totally done that to Wilder, too. So it's like, it's not the idea. It's just how creepy.
But she kept it forever and eventually, like, framed it and gave it to me because she thought it was so funny. She was like, these are your hands.
I mean, it is funny. Your hands and maybe, like, a little bit of your face. And it's a horror. It could be the cover for a horror movie.
It really
movie,
could.
Sure.
So thank you, Pam. Thank you, Mom, for being such a big part of my life and making me as weird as... Oh, and Rizzo! Well, he's a pirate, too.
Okay. I was like, do you remember his name? I forgot it. You and Alex. Like, I call him a nerd, but you knew, too.
I know Rizzo. I've seen... Is he... Muppet Christmas Carol about
Muppet
a
treasure.
Thousand
oh,
goddamn
like
times.
Light
the lamp, not the rat. Light the lamp, not the rat. Rizzo the rat. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. Follow us on social media. We will see you in 2 weeks. We love you so much. We hope the world's still here after the eclipse. And keep it weird.
Keep it weird.